This episode of the show is brought to you by Audible. You can get a free 30-day trial and free audiobook of your choosing by going to audibletrial.com/missspots. Choose from over 180,000 different titles, such as Chris Jericho's latest book, No is a Four-Letter Word. It's even narrated by the man himself. Audiobooks are perfect for the person on the move. Believe me, they're great. Maybe you want a mystery novel or a biography of someone you love. Audible has it all. Plus, it's free to try. If you don't like it, which would be weird, cancel and keep your free audiobook that you downloaded forever. Go try it now at audibletrial.com/missspots. Audible. Listening is the new reading.
Mike, I just got word from backstage that the Asuka and Kairi Sane are only named at this point the Kabuki Warriors because Vince McMahon's original idea and concept pitch, the Sushi Warriors, was shut down vehemently by the writing staff.
This and other cultural appropriations and more on the Misspots podcast.
Time to play the game!
I also hear Hibachi Warriors was in play, too.
I think basically the WWE just, they went on the room, and Vince McMahon just pointed at a writer and say something Japanese. And they just did that for, I think they have 134 writers now. And they just put them all on a whiteboard, and each one more awful than the next. And they finally just settled on Kabuki, which is actually dumber in a lot of ways than the Viking experience.
It really is. Like you texted me what the definition of Kabuki was, and I honestly didn't know this.
Mike, would you like me to read it?
Yes, I think that the audience deserves to know what this is if they're unsure of what the meaning of Kabuki is.
I am assuming that no one listening to us has Google. So I have done this for you. Kabuki, a form of traditional Japanese drama with highly stylized song, mime, and dance, now performed only by male actors, using exaggerated gestures and body movements to express emotions, and including historical plays, domestic drama, and dance pieces. Who would read that and not think professional wrestling, female tag team?
Female professional wrestlers. Yes.
I mean, this will go under the radar because of the whole Viking experience thing, but if you told me that in the film Ready to Rumble from 2000 that there were tag teams called the Kabuki Warriors and Viking experience, I would say, of course there were. I would think, of course there were.
That's you wouldn't even find those too dumb for that movie?
Well, I'm just saying that's what hack, shitty writers who know nothing about professional wrestling would come up with. The Viking experience and Kabuki Warriors. That's what they would come up with. And that is what has been pitched on WWE television over the last month or so. It is mind-blowing.
I just realized we did not have any experience with the Vikings this week.
Maybe because the crowds don't seem to care and they've already realized that they've ruined them from the beginning.
Or maybe because they're Vikings, they're not allowed in the country of the United Kingdom.
I like that the United Kingdom is now a country, but
they are.
The United Kingdom is not a country. It's a United Kingdom. It's several countries united as one.
But they're only recognized by the UN as the United Kingdom.
Oh, okay. Well, I still don't think it's considered a country. But then again, I have not brushed up recently on my geography, so I don't want to embarrass myself by talking about this any further.
Geography B champion 1997 in my school. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, then I'm going to take your word for it, even though I'm pretty convinced that you're wrong. Is there a geography? Anyway, I want to get off the subject there immediately. Mike.
Yes.
We talked about this last week and the fact that both of us are probably to the point where we're not really all that interested in the show anymore, other than the fact that we get to have a podcast and joke about it every week.
Pretty much, yes.
I have come to the point where I barely even watch these shows. I don't know if I'm even qualified to make fun of them anymore. I essentially do other things while the show is on in the background and probably give it my full attention. A total of, it's just 5 hours of SmackDown and Raw, an hour and 20 minutes.
Sounds maybe about right. And that probably includes some of the commercials that catch your eye.
Absolutely. Some of those are good.
Yeah, I would say so. I think that I'm waiting for the next line in this whole Frank Thomas whatever he's hawking nowadays pill to really take a turn.
it's rough, my friend.
I will say though, I did not fall asleep during the show this week.
Well, congratulations.
I did the last 2 weeks. So that's saying something, I think, or it's saying something about that I got better sleep the night before. That's probably what it was. It's probably, I don't know.
It's because you are a journalist, Mike, and you are a professional. And
I have
that's
integrity.
Why you did not fall asleep this week. And listen, there was not a lot on Raw that was super cringeworthy. We did not have any Usy Hot show up this week, even though we had a recap, which why do that to any of us? But it was just the most lazy, repetitive booking pretty much up and down the card. The awful wild card nonsense continues. It adds nothing to the show, and if anything, detracts from the massive bloated rosters that we have on both shows.
And so Raw used up all four of their wild cards in the first hour as well. Like, the terrible thing about this, really, SmackDown showed why this rule truly does suck, because we know how many there is, so people are counting it because they think that WWE is going to screw up again like they did twice last week. So people are counting, and then on SmackDown, when we have one left going into the final segment, and it's a talk show segment, we know that someone's going to come out and interfere in some way, and that happened.
The writing is so bad on these shows that they will, the fact that they have four people that can show up, you know that four people always will show up.
Yeah.
They'll never just do one person.
They'll
or
never
two.
Fall short. They'll overshoot, but they'll right. never fall short.
But that's terrible writing. It really is. Saying that, the fact that Sami Zayn showed up at the end of the show, what if someone else showed up an hour earlier? Right? And then what, he can't be on the show? The amount of plot holes and nonsense that's involved in this entire thing. And I will tell you this, I still do not think that the announcers, at least, or many people in the WWE really know what this rule really means. The way, I can't remember if it was Cole or Corey in the opening segment, they said Roman, one of the stars that can appear on both shows.
Oh, did they? I didn't even notice that.
They basically, the way they phrased it, and it might have just been in the heat of the moment and they just phrased it incorrectly, but it made it sound like Roman was one of the wild cards always.
Oh, yeah.
And then I was like, oh, wait a minute. Was it just the four?
He's
or
like
five?
The all-time quarterback that you had in grade
quarterback.
School.
Nice. That's the way they phrased it, and then obviously different people showed up, so then it wasn't that. But I still think that they're just figuring this stuff out as they go along, and by figuring it out, I mean not figuring anything out and throwing everything at the wall. I kind of enjoyed the Miz and Roman back and forth, even though Roman was a little robotic and what Miz do I want to see?
There was some charm there.
There was some charm there. And we finally actually got Miz talking about the fact that he's turned babyface.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's overdue. Yeah. They never really addressed this, and I thought it was well done in the way they did it, even though it was in passing. And seeing him,
and it made him even more endearing with the way that he did it, was that he was searching for respect.
And it's underrated that they never really gave us that, because that's part of the journey of really becoming and loving a character. And they just kind of skipped from A to C without doing the middle part there. And it's almost like the Money in the Bank qualifying matches never happening, and then we got them after we already had the Money in the Bank participants. That's how they're booking the Miz storyline. They're just going back in and filling in the blanks.
Vince McMahon just watched Memento for the first time, and it's like, oh, this whole going backwards thing. It's interesting. Let's put that into WWE programming.
Or he heard the term prequel for the first time. The pointless tag match that followed, and this is what it was, a pointless tag match, had no drama, no interest. I don't even really remember who won. I thought it was a interference thing, wasn't it?
I think so. Yeah. I don't even remember either.
I'm 90%
sure.
Miz got pinned.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. Okay. There you go. Thank you for looking that up, Mike.
I didn't. I just remembered.
Okay.
Because Miz always gets pinned.
But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter, because the match didn't matter. There was nothing to it, and it didn't matter. The WWE has become, for as much as they hate good old professional wrestling, right? Territory wrestling. They are basically putting on shows exactly like that. They're putting every single star on the show. They're always giving them a match with somebody. They're playing to the stadium, not to TV. Right? They put every single one of their people against other stars that no one can really afford a loss, and none of them any don't matter. They're just playing to the crowd that's there. It's like a house show all the time. Instead of booking TV like an episodic television show, they don't do that ever. And I just realized this watching the show, that's really embarrassing for an entertainment company like the WWE, that they never set things up for the following week. They don't let any characters develop and have wins matter and losses matter. I think Vince McMahon would probably think that wins and losses not mattering is somehow progressive, and that's what we've evolved to. No, you've devolved into that. You're going back on house show circuits from from the territory days, and not progressing with narrative and storytelling, which is relevant to today's product, and should be relative to today's product, and is relevant to today's viewer.
Man, what a progressive idea that wins and losses don't matter. I mean, imagine putting that and applying that to other sports. Like, instead of having the first overall pick in the NBA draft, the Pelicans, they're playing in the NBA title game, this title series this year, because, you know, wins and losses don't matter. So why should the worst team in the league get the first draft pick? They should be playing for the title.
But overall, having Roman Reigns in a match doesn't matter on Raw is pointless. You're playing to the crowd, because the crowd is still going to pop for your Superman punch and your finish, because they're there seeing this match.
They're there for spots.
And they're excited about that. But 99.999% of your crowd is not in that arena. They're not enjoying it in that way. So find different ways to cater to them and work on the episodic nature of television and try to build good feuds. And part of that is not putting on pointless tag matches. Putting on pointless fatal four ways, not putting on matches where your Intercontinental Championship gets pinned yet again on SmackDown. It is so repetitive and so lazy that it is just mind blowing.
What did the anonymous Raw GM have to say to you? I heard your notification there. Hornswoggle. What did he have to say to you?
Kevin, you are correct. and when I take over again, I will be booking the show in this manner.
Good to hear. Thanks, Swoggle.
Listen, we had weeks ago, we haven't seen this in a while, I feel like, but we saw Mojo Rawley developing into the guy who talks to himself in the mirror. Not exactly the most progressive thing in the world. And of course, he did it in that black room that now Aleister Black took over. Because he's Aleister Black.
They're co-oping it.
Yeah, they all use that room instead of just like doing stuff.
Bray's subleasing it out to other people right now.
Can you imagine if they just did one of those? And I'm just thinking now of Mojo Rawley just in the locker room talking into a mirror. It would be revolutionary. I don't know why everything has to be in a black void. It's nonsense. I just keep coming up with more and more stuff that just is terrible. But they were trying to make this new character or this new develop with him, and basically the development is face paint.
Yeah. And the face paint development happened a month ago, and then we didn't see anything. And they're like, oh yeah, we got to call back this one. And it was a 2-minute squash of Apollo Crews, a guy who they kind of gave a little bit of a push to a month or so ago.
Well, hey, remember what I said about Cedric Alexander? Remember him?
Who?
We got a whole video package about how he was coming to Raw and he was going to take the world by storm. Nothing. We got Apollo Crews getting some features after the Superstar Shakeup. Nothing.
God,
in fact,
you are going to be right about the Apollo Crews Cedric tag team.
100%, bro. I've already got this thing in the bag for 2019. But
too bad that
Cruz,
wasn't one of your like predictions for the year.
Well, I've already put it back in that file, even though it didn't happen, and you'll never know.
That's pretty much true.
Apollo Crews came over from SmackDown to fight Mojo Rawley. That was literally what happened because Apollo Crews is on SmackDown.
Yeah, that's
why? What is the point of that? That is the perfect thing of shoehorning. Mojo Rawley could have fought anybody. There's tons of people on Raw he could have beaten up there, right? I think Heath Slater's still on Raw, maybe. Sure. Who cares? But they brought Apollo Crews because they had to have a fourth person, and Mojo face paint Rawley. His new gimmick is that he has face paint, and the announcers don't care.
Yeah, and that's
what WWE don't care.
They didn't talk about him talking to himself. They're like, he's got face paint now. He's changed. Like, fucking A. Like, your announcers don't even know what to do with all of this.
Nothing about this was put off as impressive or new or interesting. It was just another thing to do. And this is where you need to be building your mid-card so that you don't have to put on main eventers fighting each other in the first hour of Raw or the opening match. You need to build your mid-carders up and make them interesting, and you just treat them as an afterthought always. And I'm not saying that Mojo Rawley has the highest upside, but put some effort into this or don't do it at all.
Yeah.
My thoughts.
Good thoughts.
Yeah. So there was two big... Maybe the first one started last week, but Alexa Bliss's new gimmick change is that she has real trouble with her gear. Shoelaces 2 weeks ago and her gear not showing up this week. I guess that's something. And then Nikki Cross is no longer crazy, or maybe she is. Nikki Cross backstage comes across as a perfectly normal human being. Nikki Cross later on in the ring is a wild lunatic again. What the hell is going on here?
Yeah, but did you notice at the end she kind of gave like the creepy smile?
She did, but I think that's probably just her smile.
Nikki Cross, creepy human.
No, but and the other thing about this that just really bugged me is that maybe I haven't been noticing this, and maybe this has happened before, but Nikki Cross was obviously wearing more makeup.
Yes.
Was trying to portray a much more, which I will call what most people would say, conventionally attractive persona when she was walking back, when she was backstage with Alexa Bliss.
Mm-hmm.
Nikki Cross is a talented professional wrestler with a believable and intense character that got over in NXT and could be over big time on the main roster. And after calling her up, doing nothing with her, if we're going to get, hey, you've got to be more attractive, you've got to be more, you know, put on some more makeup, brush your hair out of your face, wear some more form-fitting clothes, if that's what you need to do to get over the WWE, I thought we had this Women's Revolution thing. I thought those kind of things weren't supposed to matter anymore. We're not trying to sell every single wrestler as a sex symbol, but it certainly felt like that's why she was featured on television this week.
I think part of what she was used was also being that she's from Scotland, so UK, they'll get a pop out of her. But will we see her next week? I don't know.
Probably not, but it does seem like they're setting something up with her and Alexa Bliss as her being Alexa's new Mickie James, you know, being her second, which I'm okay with, but you could use her as the wild, crazy person that got manipulated by Alexa Bliss, who is basically a heel but is lovable in the fact, and you set up a really cool feud with those two down the line where Nikki Cross got manipulated by Alexa and get her over huge as a babyface. But as this kind of crazy, wild character is willing to do anything for Alexa Bliss, that's pretty badass.
Yeah.
That could go over really, really well. I just don't understand the WWE's motives here. Why change up her presentation in the backstage but not inside the ring?
Yeah.
It's very, very confusing to me on many, many levels. The contract signing with Charlotte and Lacey and Becky was painfully scripted.
Yeah.
Painfully scripted. But yet, Becky Lynch still comes off as kind of badass here.
Yeah. She comes off like shooting from the hip.
I don't know if she actually is, or she just can take that scripted material and do more with it than Charlotte can and Lacey Evans can. I really do think that Charlotte is a gifted promo. I almost feel like, and this is probably completely subjective nonsense, but I can almost feel like I can feel when Charlotte is given a little more rope and when she is basically said, you say the 17 words in this order. Because when she does that, she is not as engaging and not as interesting. And maybe she just kind of has had some great promos where she has taken that scripted stuff and really made gold out of it. But the big problem I had with this segment, Mike, was that it was the same old bullshit contract signing.
Yeah.
They took
talk, 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 and fight, fight, fight.
The idea I had for this segment was you've got Lacey Evans and Charlotte Flair are both getting championship matches on Sunday. Why not have them draw in some way? I don't know, draw straws, flip a coin, whatever it is, to decide who's going to fight Becky first and who's going to fight her second.
That would have been interesting. They could still do that at the pay-per-view.
They could, but why not do, instead of doing this boring contract signing that we've seen a billion times where nothing came out of it, why not have them come into the ring or do whatever they are going to do and make that the segment? who's going to get the upper hand? Who's going to get Becky second after she's already had her first match? And it could tease some tension between Lacey and Charlotte. And then Becky could come out, get her face on the show, which is so important, and antagonize both of them and be the puppet master a little bit. It would get them on a segment, stop a stupid contract signing slash fight that we always see, and give us something that we literally have never seen before and probably will not have the opportunity to see again anytime in the near future. This is not rocket science. This is basically, you know, back in the day when they used to draw numbers for the Royal Rumble, and that would set up feuds and things of that nature. You can fill TV time with different things other than the same shit you've been doing for 10 straight, 15 straight, 20 straight years. And the contract signing, unless you have a new twist on it, honestly should never be used again.
Yeah. I actually think that they could have done the whole fight and had it be a little more interesting, because I like the part where Becky said to her, "This is your first time doing one of these." And they could have called that back at the end with her being like, "Hey, your first contract signing, welcome," and have Becky kind of flip the table at Lacey and attack Lacey, being like, "Welcome to the big leagues now." And you could have still gotten your brawl out of it that they like to do with the contract signings all too often, and with a slightly different twist to things instead of the just generic cookie cutter stuff that they went with.
And by the way, Mike, that's another good way to do it.
Yeah,
I agree with you. I think the mistake that fans make is that everything's been done before, and we're doomed to repetition for the rest of our lives. And the fact is that new creative ideas are always out there. It just takes the right people to come in and do something with them. And I think those people are us. But I digress. Man, Baron Corbin going over Ricochet is depressing.
Just a tad.
This is a guy who's...
So depressing that it makes you open up another beer, or...
That's actually a bubbly. I'm not drinking... Okay. Yeah, no beer. I've got a cranberry bubbly and a strawberry bubbly here.
Oh, mix and match.
Well, listen, I got to be hydrated for the show. Ricochet is not special. He is not...
Let's phrase that slightly differently. He's not being portrayed as special.
That's what I was getting to.
Yeah.
If you're the WWE, this is a guy who flips around and does some really incredible things that will pop a crowd. He's not a special performer, and he will not be pushed as one, even though he is one. And this is the perfect example of this. In the run-up to Money in the Bank, having Baron Corbin beat Ricochet does nothing for either one of them ever. No one believes more in Baron Corbin. No one thinks this has any effect on Money in the Bank, and it won't. And all it was is Ricochet absorbing a loss on television, and it's pretty dumb.
What would have been better, all of this stuff or the promo where they're all sitting on ladders?
I'll take a match over stupid ladder sitting. But you know what I won't take? And I
climbing ladders and trying to grab the briefcase early.
I mean, why do they continue to do this? There was a really good article.
It's like when people throw people over the top ropes leading up to Royal Rumble.
There was a really good article on What Culture about how stupid Vince McMahon must think his fans are, and the fact they have to spell everything out in the most diatribe, exposition spitting nonsense, and having Alexa Bliss and then Ricochet and Almas going on SmackDown have to go up and grab this briefcase is exactly that. This is what we are going to see. Yeah, we know, man. No one's watching this needing to be explained what's happening. It's pretty evident what's happening. You don't have to show it to us. And overall, it just makes everyone involved look like a fucking idiot. Because nothing they're doing matters.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what else to say other than that.
Bray is a juggalo. I know he didn't have face paint on to look like ICP. And for those of you who don't know who ICP is, congratulations.
Good for you.
Good for you.
And that's, we aren't even saying that in a condescending way.
No, good for you. I envy you. But Bray, I don't know what is about his mannerisms, the Firefly Funhouse. I also don't know what it is about people who like this. Because I do not. I find it car crashy kind of watching is interesting. I know that's not that term, the wording of that was terrible.
Car crashy.
Yeah. It's
one of my favorite adjectives.
Yeah, it's not good. The character is not compelling. And you know why I don't think it's compelling? Because a weirdo kid show host who dresses in stupid masks with puppets is not a character I want to watch as a professional wrestler. I think this is going to be legendarily bad, even though people seem to be downloading it crazily on YouTube. This is not compelling to me. And if his new catchphrase is wowie, yowie, wowie, wow. Who came up with that? This was not good. And the other big thing that I hate about this entire thing, and we've never talked about on the show, every week we see the same segment on Raw and SmackDown.
Yeah.
As if they're different viewing audiences.
Exactly.
They are not.
And they really hammered it home this week. A new episode. Graves saw the same exact thing last night.
He's on Raw. He's watching this. Stop pretending that they're two different shows with two different audiences. The only difference is some people don't watch SmackDown and they just watch Raw.
Yeah.
Everyone else is a crossover. And the fact that the commentators they really aren't even that interested in what's happening. They don't talk about it. They're always just kind of like, wow, what was that? Anyway, yeah. About this other stupid thing going on. They have the same interest in this that I do, which is, I can't believe they put that on television. Oh, well, I guess we'll hope it gets better next week.
Maybe this is like an absolute brilliant piece of art being done by WWE, and they are making something that is mirroring the audience of like having a short attention span towards things. Like, I know that's complete bullshit and I'm looking into that way too much, but here's something about my feelings on this whole thing. There are aspects of this that I can kind of understand why people are going all bonkers banana pants about. And it's mostly just that this is something new for WWE. I'll give them that. We haven't really ever seen something like this. Or if we have, it's been a while. But this is the cynic in me eventually coming out and being like, you know what else had a really great reception from the crowd at one point? Was the Fashion Files. And then they drove that into the fucking ground. And I have a lot of apprehension to the belief that they're going to do the same thing with this. And while it is a little darker and demonic, and I feel like they're trying to replicate some sort of these lower budget looking horror films, and stuff like that. Maybe even Child's Play, which is getting a reboot now, taking some lending from that in a crossover of childlike things. I can understand why some people like it. I'm not super crazy about it. I am not psychosis about it. I did a Mexicools thing there.
Did you do that because did you do it because Silver King passed away?
No, I didn't. I didn't even think of that. But R.I.P. I'll continue seeing because I'm gonna keep on watching. I'll keep on seeing it week after week and see where it goes. But I mean, I think that people need to throttle themselves a little bit. It's like the same people who are complaining about WWE being so fucking shitty with their writing recently are like treating this like the second coming of Christ. And it's like pick one side. Like, are you really going to give them all the credit in the world for this one segment that they'll probably screw up? Like, I'm not saying you can't enjoy it. Enjoy it. But I'm just trying to throttle my expectations right now until I see more and I start seeing an actual feud develop off of this. And so we could have talked about this last week, but we didn't. You saw the whole thing with Bray saying that I implanted secret messages into promos.
Yeah.
And this got like the internet crowd, especially on Reddit, like trying to figure out what the messages were. And last I looked was like late last week and people were seemingly stretching. And Bray even gave some hints on Twitter as to what they were. And the best that I could find is it's just there are some things that piece together, but it's just rambling nonsense, which was what Bray's character was. So having a rambling, nonsensical character tell you I have a message and trying to look through that and find just more ramble, par for the course. But anyway, yeah, I want to see what they how they actually make this into wrestling. This isn't just episodic entertainment television that we're just watching like any other TV show. This is supposed to be wrestling as well. So get him involved with someone and let's see how this character interacts with another character. And then I'll start making more judgments at that point.
Yeah, I haven't found any of these episodes actually all that interesting. So I'm a little bit less interested in general in this character. But no, Bray Wyatt, by the way, to me, he is Stardust.
You said that a few weeks ago.
Yeah,
he's going all in.
He's buying in completely, and I give him all the credit in the world for that. But that does not mean that it's any good. Because Stardust was awful, and hence why Cody Rhodes no longer works for the company. The fact that they pulled Braun Strowman, and by the way, I'm so good at transitions. The fact that they pulled Braun Strowman out of the Money in the Bank ladder match, to me, was a good thing. I don't think he should have been involved in the first place. I don't know if you can find a more poorly booked competitor in the last year and a half, 2 years, than Braun Strowman.
God, yeah.
He has been on the precipice so many times, has been in a tag team with a child, fought comedians. He is on the verge of something special because of his size, and he is less over by the day. And the fact that this is one of those situations where he was not going to win this again, so I'm glad they pulled him out of it. But one thing that just struck me with Braun Strowman after losing because of all the interference and letting Sami Zayn be in the ladder match was that he put Sami Zayn through a table and seemed very satisfied with himself. He lost the opportunity to win the Money in the Bank briefcase. He should have been furious, not just furious and thrown Sami Zayn through a table. He should have been pissed and swearing and frustrated.
He should have put Michael Cole through Sami Zayn, who went sure. through the table.
But I know he's quote unquote getting his heat back, But that's not what a character does. That's what you do for a character in the context of a show.
Yeah.
Braun Strowman just lost an opportunity of a lifetime, and he seemed like, eh, whatever.
It was a perfect trade-off to just put a guy through a table. Like, all right, I'm now fine with the result.
Yeah, I got it back. That's not what that's there for. That's not what any good professional wrestler should ever be satisfied with. He should want to get back at Strowman. He should want to get back at Drew McIntyre. He should be seething at losing his opportunity.
He wants to get back at himself?
Did I say Strowman?
Yeah. You meant Baron?
Baron, thank you. He should want to get back at Baron Corbin. He should be seething as we go off the air and wanting to make everyone pay. But we're so lazy in booking that he's okay because Sami Zayn won, but he got put through a table, so everything's back to zero. No, he lost a huge opportunity. That should be the story. But Braun Strowman doesn't care about the championship. Braun Strowman doesn't care about winning matches. Because no one does, because it's not important.
We should have, at Money in the Bank on Sunday, security guards being told, look, Braun Strowman is fucking furious. Everyone watch out for him, because he might come in, he might be angry still, and he might fuck shit up. And have that bubble over. And like, that continue that frustration, continue that anger that the monster should have. Monsters don't typically just have instant satisfaction from when things go wrong against them to just be like, oh, and all of a sudden I am fine with this. This is fine. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just not good. It's not good booking. It's not believable.
Yeah. So we go into SmackDown, and Roman's on the show. Roman's on the show that he is supposed to be on for the first time in 2 weeks. And he brings out Miz. It's like almost like the same way, but opposite of how the show before this started. Miz tries to do an Oasis thing, and it was cute, although it didn't go over very well.
Not at all.
I will say that he followed up and tried to recover pretty well. But yeah, that did fall pretty flat. Shane gets involved. Brian and Rowan get involved. The Usos get involved. Too many cooks in the kitchen. This had multi-person tag match written all over it. Hashtag pointless tag match, pointless six-man tag match, pointless multi-person handicap match, whatever you want to do, because that's what we ended up getting out of this whole fucking charade. I am still just enamored with the way that the Usos, like what you said last week, the Usos are a part of a comedy storyline on Raw, but are like the heroic team of SmackDown. That just bothers me so much that there isn't even continuity for the same people across multiple shows.
This is just another one of those completely pointless matches. It meant nothing to have the Usos on SmackDown. Nothing. But it's crossover, so it must be a big deal.
I guess. And then the match itself, the fact that Shane is pinning people, important. Shane pinning anyone in 2019 in any year is a travesty, but he wins this match for his team. What did this do? Did this accomplish anything? I don't think so.
No, this was a waste of time. This segment, this match was a waste of time.
I feel like much of the show was a waste of time because,
yeah, of course,
we had the dumb fatal four-way with that we kind of alluded to from Raw with all of the Money in the Bank guys. I wrote down here in my notes, Charlotte said some stuff because we got an obnoxiously long video package. WWE's video packages are wonderful. They're eye-catching. They're beautifully done. This one with her and Becky Lynch was so goddamn long. Like, I felt like it was over 5 minutes. And then we got a promo from Charlotte, and I don't remember a thing that she said. Do you? Can you help out on this?
It was a fine video package, but it was very long and didn't really add much to the narrative.
But what about her promo? Did she...
Oh, the promo?
Or was it just her throwing to a video package? I honestly don't remember. And
that's
this
all
was
it was.
An hour ago.
That's all it was.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I don't remember it. The aforementioned Kabuki Warriors had their coming out match with Sonya and Mandy, who are officially Fire and Desire. So two very bad team names, though Fire and Desire still much better than Kabuki Warriors. But
that's all I could think of is how terrible they've been at coming up with names for teams.
Yeah. I bet they want to rename the Usos. They're like, you guys can't just be the Usos. That's your last name. Like, well, it's not really our last name. Our last name's Fatu. Oh, we could work off of that. Let's just stick with the Usos, okay? That happened. It had no bearing really on anything. We're told that Asuka and Kari have like tag team title implications with this match, but I think most people couldn't even see past just the ridiculousness of the name.
But in what way? Where's the implications? There's no match at Money in the Bank. There's no guarantee of a future match. We have Mandy Rose, who's involved in the Money in the Bank ladder match, being involved in this match. Where is anything going? There seems to be no plan.
Where is any of this going? That might be the most insightful thing ever said on this podcast.
Where is Paige going awkwardly standing out there with Asuka and Kari Sane? There is no continuity there.
God, that was so painful.
It is so awkward.
You had her play to the crowd for 1 second. She introduced the tag team name and was immediately cut off. Like, this is painful.
Yeah, this is not well done.
Not well done at all. And then, like, we finish things off with KO and Sammy beating up Kofi, Xavier coming out to even things up. But Kofi ends up standing tall by the end of the show. This just seemed, there was, other than just Sammy coming, and I mentioned this earlier, we knew there was still one more person left to come over from Raw. So we knew something was happening here. It was likely going to be Sammy because Sammy's on Raw. He's KO's buddy. So that wasn't really a big surprise. Everything else about this, like, I felt like there's been some really good things in this feud, but this was just a cookie cutter segment to me.
There was nothing to this. Nothing about this sold this as more important than it was 2 weeks ago. You can't always hit something out of the park. I get that. But when you hit nothing out of the park for 5 straight hours or 10 or 15 for the last several weeks, it just gets to a point where, what have you done for me lately, kind of thing.
Yeah, they're not even like playing small ball either. Like if you want to do baseball analogies, like getting base hits, stealing, that can help work and score runs, but they're not even really doing that either. No, don't want to run with that one. Sure. It was dumb anyway.
No, I'm just trying to think of Xavier. Don't come out here. I'm going to do this myself.
Yeah.
Kevin Owens has jumped you on multiple occasions and had other people help out. Like, there's nothing here. They're not even doing things well that have been done before. It's not even, not everything can reinvent the wheel, but they're not even doing normal things well.
Yeah. They're not even going with tried and true things, but I don't even know what those are anymore, to be honest.
Yeah.
All right. So since this was the go home to Money in the Bank, it's time to talk about Money in the Bank pay-per-view and give our predictions for the show. Actually, just now when I refreshed the Wikipedia page for the event, another match got added. So we now have 11 matches on this card. So let's run down these and see what we think on this. You know what? I am a little curious real quick. I'm not trying to make this show go on much, much longer than it needs to be, but do you have a general idea of where we stand on predictions right now, Kevin? Like, are you far ahead?
I'm not far ahead, but I am ahead.
Okay. All right. Good to know. That's all I really wanted to know.
Okay.
I know I wasn't in the lead, so I'm just kind of knowing how much ground I have to make up.
Yeah, I won the first couple pay-per-views by like one or two, and you had more victories than me at WrestleMania. So I'm up by like two or three total matches.
Okay. God, it's so crazy to think that this is the first pay-per-view since Mania. And Mania seems like four months ago.
Forever ago, yeah.
All right, so we have announced for the pre-show right now, Daniel Bryan and Rowan defending the SmackDown tag titles against the Usos.
Sure.
Yeah, this was the one that was just popped up on, and it has the little P next to it for pre-show.
Of course they do, because right now the Revivals have reached out and said, hey, we'll fight you anytime, Usos, so go after the SmackDown championships before that.
Very true, yeah.
I mean, I guess I got to go with Bryan and Rowan, right?
Yeah, it would be kind of silly to take the titles off of them. Right now, and wait, the Usos are on Raw.
Yeah.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah, they're not even on the show.
Yeah. Oh God, I hate this fucking shit sometimes.
I know.
Now, okay, yeah, Daniel Bryan and Rowan, fuck off. Cruiserweight championship match. It doesn't have a P next to it, but it probably will be because, you know, it fucked 205 Live in WWE's opinion. Tony Nese defending against Aria Davari. I'm just going to go with Tony Nese here. Once again, we don't watch 205 Live. So, yeah, it's just a shot in the dark kind of there.
It is, and it also he won the championship at Mania, so it makes sense. I mean, don't just flop the titles from pay-per-view to pay-per-view. So, yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah. Roman Reigns versus Elias.
I mean, Roman Reigns.
Yeah, of course. Elias, as Roman kind of alluded to, you've never done anything here. So beating Roman on a pay-per-view is not going to be one of those things that Elias does.
The one thing about that comment is so true. He's never really had a feud. I still cannot.
Most of his feuds
back.
Have been 3 weeks long at max.
And they have never really capitalized on a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
He's been featured on a pay-per-view in a wrestling capacity like four times.
And he's been on the main roster for like 2 years?
Yeah. And the last one I can remember is him fighting Jason Jordan. And that was even kind of a mini feud. Like
was he in the Elimination Chamber?
He was in Elimination Chamber, but once again, that was just a thrown together six person thing.
Yeah,
yeah. He has been an afterthought who really has not done anything. So of course he's going to lose this match.
Yeah, Miz and Shane in a steel cage. Will this finally be the blow off to their feud? Miz wins?
I got to go with Miz here. He deserves it. He should have won at WrestleMania. What do you got?
I'm going to go with Miz, too. Okay. And I do hope that this is the blow-off. And I also wish that this was a number of years ago, because this is a match that I feel like some color from these guys would go a long way in this match.
Well, Shane turns red after
not that
2 seconds of action. So is that what you mean?
Oh, and not even his tan either.
Okay.
Not that orange. But yeah, I think that this could be like one of those really intense blow-offs. Now, I know Shane's not a professional wrestler. We've mentioned that many times before. So he is limited in what he can do, but he is dumb. And it probably would blade if told to do so. But yeah, I feel like Miz really needs this one.
I agree.
I know through most of Miz's career, we've always been like, Miz does not need to win. Miz does not need to win. Miz needs to win this.
He does. I agree with you on that.
Samoa Joe and Rey Mysterio. We didn't even mention how on Raw... they kind of brought up the whole with the Cesaro thing. Is Dominic actually your son? Do we need to go back to that?
No, that's why we didn't bring it up.
That's probably good. Yeah. So who do you got here for Joe and Ray?
I called the last two. So
oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay. I want Joe to win, but I don't think that that's going to happen. I think they're going to put the belt on Ray here.
So do I.
Really?
I do. I don't. Samoa Joe is not in any way, shape, or form a WWE guy.
No.
He has a blistering promo, an incredible, even at this time of his career where he's not the in-ring performer he once was, but he still is more believable and more badass than 90% of the people they can roll out. But he is not their guy, and Rey Mysterio is the kind of guy that they want to put a belt on for nostalgia's sake. Rey, by the way, has put over a bunch of people. He's not mm-hmm. just going up there and monopolizing wins. This is not a diatribe on you know how bad Rey Mysterio is. Yeah. I like Rey, and I think he has a lot to contribute, but the U.S. title doesn't matter to them, and they will switch it here, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's really well said and condensed into what I think. The Becky matches. Becky against Lacey, Becky against Charlotte. Does she retain both? Does she lose one? Does she lose both?
This is a tough one because there's a lot of... Becky Lynch not having both those titles is probably a good thing. If they're not going to consolidate those titles, they definitely should get one of them off of her.
It just becomes a really difficult thing to do at this point. How do you have someone lose one and remain credible for it? Like, I get that you probably shouldn't have put both titles on her in the first place if you're not going to consolidate them within her reign. It's just so hard to be like, all right, now we got to split one off, but we want her to keep the other one and remain strong.
They seem to be
If you get fluke, if you get fluky, then you almost feel like she deserves a rematch.
Yeah, I have no idea what they're going to do here. I am going to go... I honestly think that they should consolidate these titles. That would be my preference. I think consolidating titles is a very good thing at this point in the WWE, especially with this whole nonsense wild card thing and basically the death of the brand split, because that's what that is. So I'm going to go on a limb and say that Becky wins both of them. I don't think... A lot of me does not think that will happen. I do think that they really want Lacey Evans to be something special. And I think they're going to make the wrong mistake of putting a belt on her. But I'm going with my heart here and saying Becky wins both.
Okay. I'm going to go with that they take the SmackDown title off her. I think Charlotte wins the SmackDown title. To allow Becky to remain solely on Raw and have a more extended feud with Lacey. So I'm going to say she beats Lacey.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I'm going to say that probably by a roll-up or a just caught her in the disarmer, but she'll lose to Charlotte and... therefore allowing Charlotte to take the belt back to SmackDown solely and for Becky to take her belt, that other belt, to Raw solely so that they don't have that crossover anymore. The WWE Championship match, Kofi and KO. I'm thinking like... You've built up this whole ride around Kofi. It's probably a little too early to end that ride. So, and I just feel like while there's been some good stuff with this feud, it just has seemed a little rushed. So it'll probably go on still after this. So why not just keep it on Kofi for now?
I'm with you on that. They shouldn't take the title off Kofi at this point.
Seth and AJ for the Universal Championship. What do you got here?
Seth.
Yeah, Seth. I think it'll be an awesome match, but yeah, this is Seth. And now the namesake of the pay-per-view. Let's talk about the Money in the Bank ladder matches. Let's start with the men. And we got now Sami Zayn, Ricochet, Drew McIntyre, Baron Corbin, Mustafa Ali, Finn Balor, Andrade, and Randy Orton. Now, we talked a little bit, we gave our impressions last week on this. And correct me if you remember, did I say Braun Strowman last week or did I say Baron Corbin?
I can't remember.
Okay, I think I said one of those two. I feel like I was saying Braun, which now is irrelevant. But I saw a lot of people mentioning on Twitter during the whole SmackDown segment that, oh, because Ricochet took the briefcase off at the end of that fatal four-way, he's definitely not winning, because it is kind of the MO of WWE to, if someone holds the belt up in the go-home show, they're likely not going to be the winner. Finn would be a great opportunity for this if he wasn't the IC champion. I think that Drew is a great person to grab that, just will look ridiculous carrying around a briefcase. I think Andrade would be a great person to have this.
Who do you got? End of the day. Come on.
Yeah. I'm going to go Drew.
I'm going to go Drew as well.
Oh,
I was
really?
I actually already wrote that down. I'm actually mad that you went with that because it now feels like I'm following you. But I think that Drew McIntyre is the best person for this. I think having a heel in this role is good, especially a believable, not chicken shit heel that can cash this thing in. And I do think, I mean, they've done Drew and Seth to death, but they obviously like the pairing, and this could be a really good tease after it. I do think they're going to go with the babyface winning the women's Money in the Bank, so why not go with a heel for the men's? And if you run on the heels, I think they're high on Almas, but I just don't see it yet for him. Mm-hmm. So I'm going with Drew there. And then,
so you mentioning a babyface for the women's.
I'm going with Ember Moon.
Okay. I think that that would be a crowd favorite. I think that people would definitely like that one there. And Alexa won last year, right? And then immediately cashed in that night, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I wouldn't see her. I mean, her and Bayley have like the best pedigrees, I guess you could say, in the match. And just, I'm sorry, I don't see Bayley getting it because they don't care about Bayley. Ember's a really good choice.
I feel like they're high on her. I think she could do a good job with that. And Mandy Rose, another high value piece for the WWE, and I can see them going with her for this as well. But who do you have?
I'm gonna go with, you know what? I'm gonna look like the biggest hypocrite because I just talked this one down. I'm gonna go with Bayley. I think that there could be something there. Wait, which show is she? She's on SmackDown, right?
Yes, she's on SmackDown.
Okay. Something with her and Charlotte as a way of like, because we've already gotten some teasing between them. So building up Bayley once again to being a credible threat in the women's division while holding that briefcase. And that could even be a great storyline, and having her be like, I am not ready to cash this in. I am going to make myself better and better and better until I know I can beat you again. And then you'll know when I'm ready to take that title from you. But this is WWE. They're dumb, so they probably won't do something like that. But I'll still stick with Bayley as my pick.
So only thing that we've disagreed with this entire pay per view are the women's matches.
Yeah, except for one. I mean, you say Bayley beats Lacey. I say Becky beats Lacey. I say Becky beats Lacey. We differ on the SmackDown match. Okay. It's a small way for me to catch up to you. But that is Money in the Bank. Is there any matches that you're specifically looking forward to?
I think that the Seth and AJ Styles match will be great. The Money in the Bank are always interesting, but a lot of times they sound better on paper than they are. I think 8 competitors is way too many for the match. I think 5 or 6 are the max that kind of match should have.
It used to be 6, I think.
But honestly, 3 or 4 would really be great. I think that they really overdo this and put way too many people involved in it. I hope to see Miz just destroy Shane McMahon in that cage. So I'm looking forward to that as well in some small way, even though I hate seeing Shane McMahon do anything.
Yeah, I agree with you on the Seth and AJ match. As I mentioned before, I think that'll be a good one. I feel like the Tony Nese and the Aria Daivari match will be quite good because the cruiserweight matches usually are, and this is the pay-per-views are like the one time a month I get to actually watch cruiserweight action and be like, man, there's some good guys on there, but I just never have the time to actually watch their show. And yeah, if Miz can beat up Shane a good bit, I'll be happy with that. Becky Charlotte could be a really good match as well. I mean, I we've seen them do it plenty of times before. It might as well be Cena and Orton at this point in time. But we'll probably get something good out of them.
I agree.
All right. Anything else you want to add into this before we sign off?
There's other stuff to talk about, but we can probably do that next week because it's getting late.
Okay. Well, thank you everyone once again for joining us. Make sure you check out our social media. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/MissSpots. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at MissSpots. You can listen to this podcast in one of many different wonderful fashions, such as our website, MissSpotsPodcast.com or simply MissSpots.com. We're also available on any of the major streaming services for podcasts, such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, Google Podcasts, Podcast Addict, any of those. You can subscribe to the show and get them delivered to the device of your choice every Thursday, free of charge. We're also on Geek Life Radio every Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central at geeklifradio.com. For Kevin, my name's Mike. We'll catch you guys next week. Good night. Good wrestling.